Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are merging the streams here of what used to be sports and what now is a civic conversation coming together in the week of a Ravens-Browns game as well. Don Moeller is my co-host for all things, former Baltimore County Executive, all of our WNST programming, brought to you by our friends at Taharka, much like Baltimore Positive made with love right here in Baltimore, the Peanut Butter Cup. Ice cream with the mini peanut butter cups mixed in. No wonder it's gone. I ate it all. You can get some delivered to your house as well as some social change. Find them at Taharka. Also, our friends at State Fair in Catonsville, where we would probably be getting together with all of our local guests, if not Fadley's down at Lexington Market for a delicious crab cake, as well as our friends at Moeller and Gary Realty, where they are selling homes, listing them, getting them done, and doing it socially distanced and very, very safely as well. Don, we've reached around a little bit here with sports this week and this month, and sports kind of kicking off and the elections. We've done a lot of election stuff, but I know we want to get back to journalism and how the election, how all of this is being covered. And I know we've been wanting to get this next guest on for a little time. I'm going to let you do the introductions.
It's a real pleasure, Nestor, the deputy editor of the Baltimore Sun, of the editorial page, all things op-ed. And the real expert, and I didn't know this, Andrea, should have, before I started the research for the show, one of the things we'll get into is your expertise in the health industry and health disparities, an area that Nestor and I very, very interested in.
I'm an expert now. Lena went friend to me on Facebook. I'm good.
I got it all figured out. So it is a pleasure to welcome.
That's the real expert.
Well, right. The Baltimore Sun, Andrea McDaniel. Andrea, welcome to Baltimore Positive.
Thank you. Looking forward to this.
Yeah, well, you know, Andrea, I want to jump in. We're going all kinds of directions. We're going to talk about a lot of things. But we recently had a discussion, and Nestor and I haven't even had a chance to debrief this. We recently had a discussion with Executive Vice President of the Baltimore Ravens, now living in South Carolina, Kevin Byrne. And we were talking about the NFL's transformation from 2016, when Colin Kaepernick took the first knee, to today, to the Ravens advocacy led by their owner for Black Lives Matter. And one of the things that Kevin Byrne said, and I think it gets to a recent op-ed that you wrote, and it resonated with me, Nestor. I don't know about you, but Kevin said to us, he said, what I say to friends, said, you know, and he said, I still have some friends who don't quite understand or uncomfortable with the unrest and the Black Lives Matter. And he said, it very respectfully. He said, all I can say to them is, if you still feel that way after everything you've seen, you must not have a Black friend, or you must not have a Black business associate that you're really close to. Because other than that, I can't understand how you still wouldn't get what people are trying to talk about. What do you think about the way Kevin put that, Andrea, and what it means to you as a, not only a journalist, but an African-American female journalist?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, for people who say they're uncomfortable seeing it, I would say, imagine what it feels like to experience it. I mean, it's much more than uncomfortable. It's dangerous. It's scary. It's scary to think about the fact that you could experience it. For, you know, so those people who say they're uncomfortable, they have the privilege to say they're uncomfortable because they don't have to experience it. And Kevin Byrne is right. I mean, African Americans have been experiencing this for decades upon decades. We just wanted people to believe that we're experiencing it. And if you, you know, if you feel uncomfortable with it, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's a good thing. And Kevin Byrne is right. You know, if you don't feel uncomfortable, if you're not moved to do something by all the videos that you're seeing out there, then maybe you need to take a look at yourself.
Andrea, I'm looking at you as you try to talk about this, and I'm thinking, these are not easy. This is painful. That when you when you're sharing this experience, I'm getting a sense that there's some real pain there, not only objectively as a journalist, but from personal experience.
Right. You know, a lot of my journalist friends and I talk about this. You know, I'm an opinion writer, so fortunately I can, talk about how I feel when it comes to this stuff, you know, but a lot of journalists, a lot of African-American journalists have to write about that without showing too much of their opinion of, you know, of course their own life experiences reflect how they cover stuff, but you know, it can be emotionally taxing to have to think about this day after day, to have to see these videos day after day, then have to write about it too. You know, like I said, you know, it's a privilege not to have to worry about it. It's a privilege not to have to, you know, worry about when your husband has come home late for work, you know, if he was stopped by, you know, a cop or something, when awry and you don't know. So yes, it can be emotionally taxing. There's some memes that have been going around, you know, the internet that say, you know, your African-American friends are tired because we're tired of seeing the same videos. We're tired of seeing the same thing happen and then and nothing changes. And we're still waiting on the change right now. I mean, everybody's talking about change, but we're still waiting on that change to come. And the question still is, will it come?
Well, you know, Nestor, we interviewed Ken Singleton recently, Andrea, and I don't know if you know this or not, former Oriole great Baltimore Oriole Ken Singleton, New York Yankee broadcaster. His cousin is Doc Rivers, and they grew up together, and he talked about that. And you mentioned being tired, and I said to Ken that the most compelling part of the Doc Rivers interview to me was when he says, we continue to love our country and it doesn't love us back. And then he says, he pauses. And in your words says, I'm just so tired. Mm-hmm. I'm just so tired.
Right. Right. I mean, even when I write about this, sometimes I'm like, here I am writing it again. Isn't going to make a difference. Yes, I'm going to write it, but you know, will it make a difference this time? Sometimes I'm like, I feel like I'm writing about the same thing over and over again, but you know, I need to write about it because as long as it's happening, you know, somebody's got to write about it. But you know, sometimes I do wonder, you know, is it ever going to change? Sometimes you feel like it's been going on for so long. I mean, we're talking decades, you know, the videos make some people actually believe it's happening now. But it just feel like it's, sometimes it feels like it's never going to end.
Well, how much do you have total? And this is, Nestor loves the journalistic side of this. That the piece that you recently wrote, I mean, he spent a lot of his formative years at The Sun. The piece that you recently wrote on the op-ed page, even the headline, how much is a black man's life worth in America? And I think it wasn't minutes after that. Mm-hmm. I texted you and I said, Andrea, you have to come on and talk about this op-ed. Mm-hmm. You have total editorial control and freedom to write that article at The Sun.
Total is a pretty strong word. I do have an editor. We all need editors.
I don't have an editor. I have Don. That's why I don't work at The Sun anymore. I was a little mouthy back in the day. Right.
You run that? Like when do you go to Tricia when you want to write that? And you say do you get? I mean, I know in a normal news story, there are headline writers and then there are the reporters. Now, in an op-ed piece, do you actually write the headline as well?
Yeah, well, actually, the way things are at The Sun now, the reporters even write their headlines.
I can't get off that anymore. Back in the day when I would cover a hockey game and the coach wouldn't like it, I'd be like, hey, I didn't write the headline, man. Right.
Well, and
can't
I
do
used
that
to,
anymore.
We all have these stories.
We can't say that anymore.
That damn editor's trying to sell papers writing a headline like that. That's not even what the story said,
there,
man.
There are reporters. You know, Andrea, there's a lot of reporters who will tell you, oh, geez, Don used to call and scream and say, what the hell is that headline?
I'm sure you did.
Don, I didn't write the headline. So this one was a strong headline that you wrote. How much is a black man's life worth? And then you just really began to walk us through again. Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery.
Yeah, so
But you went right on through. Talk to us about the genesis of that article. And again, I encourage people go out on The Sun, go to their website, Andrea McDaniel, how much is a black man's life worth in America? What were you trying to get us to understand, Andrea?
Well, I mean, that was just really how I felt after I watched the video and saw the shooting, the seven shots. You know, all the cops following him to the car. It didn't look as if they tried any other means before shooting him seven times. So that really just came from the heart. And I say we write our headlines, but editors can change our headlines as well, and they do sometimes change. But that was just something that just flowed from what I felt at the moment. And, you know, you see all these shootings, they're always seem to be Black men. Of course, we know, I always get the email saying that it's not just Black men that are shot, but, you know, disproportionately, it is Black men. And I don't know, you just start to feel an anger. You just start to feel, you know, what is the worth of Black men's lives, you know, if they keep getting shot. So that was really something that I didn't really think about a lot. It just kind of came.
Andrew, when did you come?
Didn't get changed.
When did you come to Baltimore? I know you had been in Charlotte and other times, but before Freddie Gray, how long have you been here?
Oh, I've been here since 2001. So I've been here a long time.
Yeah, you've been here two decades. Okay.
And I've seen lived all over the city.
Yeah, then you've seen it all. I mean, you've seen Sheila. You've seen all of that. The mm-hmm. experience and the heaviness of that for the newspaper and the editorial part of the newspaper. And I know, look, we've talked to Joan Jacobson about this. I've talked to Michael Olesker and Dan Rod. All of us, right? And I'm an old lawyer. I mean, I am a journalist, right? I mean, I was trained by the David Simons and the Rafael Alvarezes back in the 80s, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think when you're winning Pulitzers, bringing down dirty mayors, when you're reporting on gun trace task force, where all of this is out there, and have less resources than you've ever had, there's just an impact part, I think, for all of you and the smaller staff to always get it right and to always be out in front of it, because there's a relevancy to journalism and what we're seeing now that has forced me 30 years into doing sports radio to be taking on social issues because it's that important. I'm literally doing that with my product this week because nothing's more important than what we're doing. And you have a president of the United States. I believe almost everything he does is wrong, but at the lead of it for me is calling out journalists as being fake news and people putting their lives on the line report facts or to whistleblow facts from the inside, where we're seeing something very, very fascist go on. And it's important for me that newspapers and news resources, trusted news resources, still have a strong voice at this point, because we're going to need that.
Right, right. And, you know, it's scary being a journalist sometimes. You know, I'm sure we all think about whether we should leave the industry because we don't know if it's going to be here. Used to say 10 years from now. Sometimes you wonder if it's going to be here 5 years from now.
Well, not to mention what happened in Annapolis a couple years ago, right? Like, literally.
Right, yeah. Right, right. Yeah, you don't know how people will return. And it seems like the vitriol has gotten worse and worse, like the kinds of emails I get, you know, after, you know, I write op-eds. You know, people, you know.
People would want to read either our mail, right? Like, literally, right? It's an incredible thing.
Right, right. And I mean, some of the stuff people say is pretty graphic and sometimes scary. And then, like one guy asked me last time I wrote, you still going to keep writing about that Black-white issue? You going to write about anything else? And I say that yes, because we need that voice. I mean, we need people to bring attention to issues about race. And if it makes people uncomfortable, so be it. As long as it's a problem in this country, somebody needs to write about it. And that's, you know, how I feel my role is with my column. I mean, of course, other issues are important to me, but, you know, I'm an African-American, I'm a Black woman, and those issues are important, and I feel the need, you know, to put them out there. And I feel very fortunate that I am able to.
We live in such strange times. There was an article a week or so ago that was posted on the Baltimore County Public School website about one of its elementary schools, Hillcrest Elementary School, and it highlighted it's a predominantly white school in Catonsville, pretty typical Leave It to Beaver community from days gone by, but increasingly diverse. And what it did was it highlighted how the school staff and the PTA, and that was the key, how the PTA have embraced diversity and are at a very different place than they would have been 10 years ago. And they had the PTA members talking about why Black Lives Matter is important and why having everyone understand that. It was an incredibly positive article. And on the comment section on the school system website, It was unbelievably disheartening, the number of people, mm-hmm. what you're alluding to, Andrew, who came on and said, who basically just wanted to go crazy that a school right. would be talking about diversity and these issues, and what's the PTA doing? It's almost like, Nestor, they say to you, stick to sports. It's like, why don't you all just stick to baking cookies? And the PTA, this is what's wrong. And it was, now, it did not take long. The heartening part was that teachers and other PTA and parents began to come on and basically say, what is wrong with you people? But we all, I think, ask those questions, and we try to be respectful because we're trying to have real discussions. But you pointed out, Andrea, and I want you to talk about it again in your op-ed, that shortly after the killing of in Kenosha, the vice president goes to Kenosha, and the president, I might add, and they never mention Jacob Blake's name. And right out of the chute, the vice president's coming up with a new slogan: we have to back the blue, as if we can't multitask. We can't support police officers, men and women, who are thousands, are trying to do the right thing and are good and decent people keeping us safe, and those rogue officers who continue to hunt down black men and women in the United States of America. We can multitask. And you called that out in your article, that the vice president nor the president seem to mention the other.
Right, right. Not to mention the president this weekend said diversity shouldn't be taught, you know, shouldn't be discussed in government agencies. Well,
and rejecting the 1619 project, that we shouldn't be exactly. teaching people about what happened in 1619 when we brought slaves right. to the United States. So, Andrea, you're the editorial writer. Make sense out of all this for us. Look at it through the lens of the 2020 election. As a journalist, as someone who's been a keen observer, tell us where you see this race and what you think's at stake.
Well, Trump is clearly trying to use race to rile up his base to get his votes. He's trying, you know, he's inciting race. He's, you know, purposely destroying race relations, which is hurting the country. But he doesn't seem to care, you know, he wants to get those votes. When it comes to schools, one of the biggest problems is we're not getting accurate African-American history in schools, for one. If we're getting much African-American history at all, and then I don't even think there's an African-American history curriculum in the Maryland schools. So that's one problem. But this is a country that seems like it's going back to the 1960s, where almost feels as if, you know, people want to incite a race riot. You look at Kenosha, Wisconsin, you know, where they allow people to walk in with guns, and it looks like, you know, people want to incite a race riot, which is not good for the country.
Well, there's nowhere where the double standard on the State House of Michigan, where, you know, people are coming in with a militia into, you know, a government facility and being allowed right. to like wander in with AK-15s. I mean, it's insane. Right. Andrew McDaniels exactly. is here. She is.
And if that had been an African American man.
Oh, shot 100.
There could be no argument about that amongst sane people here. Andrew McDaniels is here. She's with the Baltimore Sun doing op-ed work and talking a lot about race and Black Lives Matter. But more than that, back in the day, it says here health and medicine reporter. And I can't think health and medicine mm-hmm. together in the era of COVID. This is another swirling issue far within the level of your expertise, and masks, no masks, Fauci being sort of silenced in this, and Burks. I mean, this has been a fascinating case study on that side of your background and your curriculum as well, right?
Right, right. Well, I mean, the whole mask debate is just ridiculous to me. The tantrums over mask, I just don't understand.
Well, you're a health reporter. You've known about pandemics. I mean, you've thought about this. Now that right. it's actually here, it's insane how poorly we have done this as a nation. It really is.
Right, right. I mean, the rest of the country is laughing at us. I mean, we can't even get into other people's countries because, you know, we look so ridiculous and endangering ourselves, and, you know, they don't want us to bring it over there.
But Andrea, it raises another point. Nestor's question raises another point that you've written a lot about and really hope you can educate our listeners. And that is this whole issue of health disparities. And there are health disparities in the United States that get very little coverage. And COVID has once again exposed those, correct?
Right, right. I mean, COVID has brought to light the health disparities in this country. African Americans suffer more from diabetes. You know, they're more likely to die from heart attacks. And all of these health disparities are making it so African Americans are more likely to get COVID. And when they do get it, they're more, you know, they're more likely to die. They're more likely to suffer more major, you know, health symptoms and consequences. So it's just exposing that disparity, you know. And, you know, I've written this before too. I can't help but wonder if it wasn't mostly minorities, you know, that were dying from this disease, if people wouldn't care more, you know, if it was somebody that looked like your daughter, would people care more about this disease? And, you know, it's a big question. Is it because of who the disease is impacting?
Well, Trump thought this was a blue state problem at one point, right? Like, he literally,
right,
you know, tactically, correct, strategically believed that this would ravage your community, my community, places like Baltimore, more than it would, I don't know, Pig's Knuckle, South Dakota, where they decided to have a biker rally last week, and now they're number one.
Exactly. Right.
South Dakota's never been number one at anything. Congratulations. This week you've made it.
Right,
well,
right.
Which is
right,
the big time.
The people who thought they were immune are not. They're realizing that this affects everybody. It's not a disease of one color, of one race.
You can draw a straight line, and it is a bit depressing, and we plod through and we look for reasons to be optimistic. But about 2 months ago, it was widely reported, the Post reported it and others, that well-named sources were in a meeting with the president, and the president was berating his staff, saying that the reason he wasn't moving in the polls, they were suggesting that he needed to moderate himself a bit on some of these issues. And the president called them all stupid, as he does, and losers. And he said, you all don't get it. The reason I'm not moving the polls is I haven't been racist enough. That was his term, according to multiple sources. And from this day forward, that's going to end. And you can almost draw a straight line from that discussion as reported to when he began to ramp up this, they're coming at you, when he did away. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you think of the sequence of events, Andrea, it's pretty amazing to say to people in the suburbs, okay, I'm going to do away with all fair housing laws because I know you don't want them your neighborhood. People can get angry at me. They can get angry at Nestor. That's a fact. Just go out and look it up. The president did that. The president said that.
Oh, right.
That's
right.
Fact. He did that. Then he begins to talk about the animals and how they're destroying your city. He goes after Baltimore again. I mean, it's all of this. He refuses to say that Kyle Rittenhouse should not be walking down the street after curfew, coming across state lines with an automatic weapon. That seems to be, in a normal world, a pretty easy one. And, you know, someone, I always struggle because you can't look in someone's heart as to whether or not they're a racist. So I did like the way someone articulated it recently on social media. Say, look, I'm not going to say whether you're a racist or not. That's in your heart. But I am going to say this, that if you're still choosing to vote for Donald Trump, then I am willing to say that a candidate being a racist is not a deal breaker for you. And I think that's fair, because it would be very difficult to suggest that Donald Trump's behavior is not racist.
Right. Yeah. Well, I would say that it's not just enough not to be a racist. You also have to be able not to condone racism.
Right.
So when you hear your friends saying racist stuff, you need to call them out. You know, if you're in a store seeing somebody mistreated, you need to say something. It's not enough just to stand by and not do something about it. You're contributing to the problem. If that is the case, you know, and I've had friends, acquaintances say, you know, they just ignore the race part of Trump. You know, he's good on taxes. He's good on
judges.
You know, he's good for businesses. But we're going to ignore, you know, but, you know, the race part, he doesn't really mean it. Well, he's saying it. He said it enough that.
He said enough that I believe it. How about that?
Exactly. Right. And if he doesn't believe it and he's saying it, that's even worse. So.
Andrew, we're going to let you run in a second. Before we run out of here and Nestor takes us out, you guys just wrote an editorial recently, really concerned, I think, about back to school. And as we're airing this, it's back to school season. Nestor always loves looking at the pictures of the back to school kids. They're going to look very different this year because they're all having school in their homes.
Not with their friends either.
And not with their friends and buddies. But you raised the issue again about real concern, I think, about the gap and personally the digital divide and how this back to school is really going to, again, expose a lot of things in our country that we need to be worried about.
Oh, yeah. I mean, once again, the most disadvantaged are going to lose out. I mean, it's the most disadvantaged. You don't have access to the internet. It's the most disadvantaged. You don't have computers. And they're trying to get internet to everybody, but, you know, they haven't been able to yet. It's the kids who already have trouble reading, the kids with learning disabilities who need the one-on-one attention, who aren't going to get that anymore. So we're just going to see these gaps grow wider and wider. Parents with means can form these pods where they can hire people to come to their house or hire tutors, you know, to help their kids through this. Disadvantaged kids aren't going to do this. I do think that low-income parents care just as much about their kids.
Sure.
Sometimes there's the perception that they don't care, you know, as much. But, you know, what if these moms, you know, are taking the bus to work essential jobs, you know, to make sure that we can get our groceries, you know, then who's going to help their kids with their schoolwork? So we're definitely going to see these gaps grow. And even with reopening of schools, you know, there's some argument that, you know, teachers, you know, should be considered essential, you know, and kids don't get that sick from the disease. But, you know, kids are going to go back and take it home to their grandparents and their aunts and their uncles, you know, who are susceptible to degrees. So you see the disparities there as well. So, you know, all of this is blown wide open.
Well, thank you for stopping by to join us on Baltimore Pods. If you're out there, you're a listener, check out Andrea K. McDaniel, Baltimore Sun. Great op-eds, always thoughtful. Nestor, I know the Sun's near and dear to your heart, so take us out of here.
Well, I want to also plug the Twitter. It's Ank Walker, which is a maiden name, correct?
Yes, it's a maiden.
Okay, there's formerly last name, it says here. I'm like, so I'm going to send everybody to get Andrea K. McDaniels.
Yeah.
It's Ank Walker,
yes.
if you want to follow her.
Yes.
And of course, you can follow her at the Baltimore Sun. Hey, the Save Our Sun campaign, very, very important to – hold a light up to, you know, the man and, you know, for all facets of government. I'm an old school journalist from back in the 80s. I worked at the Sun from 86 to 92. I know I don't look that old, but my hair is growing. We appreciate what you guys do. Keep working hard over there. We'll keep reading. Appreciate you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us.
Andrea K. McDaniel, she's Ank Walker, on the op-ed page at the Baltimore Sun. You can find her there. You can find former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller and myself at Baltimore Positive. We've merged the streams, finally bringing the sports of WNST and Baltimore Positive together into one house at BaltimorePositive.com. I'll be showing you more, telling you more, sharing more, doing all that. You can find me, Nasty, at WNST.net. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Snapchat, Instagram, and live on our YouTube channel. We are WNST.net, AM 1570. Whoo, calm, local, totally Baltimore positive.